Thank you. Yeah, I had to be a little clever in how I got here today, too. I was on the other side of Market, and I had to go under into the BART, but not get on the BART. So I was very proud of myself that I figured that out, not being from here. But anyway, let me give you a little background of who I am, why I'm here. So I'm Lisa Sparks. I am director and head of a graduate program in health and strategic communication at Chapman University in Orange, California. I'm also on faculty with the Chow Family Comprehensive Cancer Center at the University of California, Irvine, and also teaching the graduate program in the School of Public Health program at UC Irvine. So this particular paper stems from I teach courses in theories of health communication, health campaigns, risk communication, just to kind of give you a flavor. This one stems out of the graduate program at Chapman University with my students in my health campaigns class. And what I have them do in that class is they do an evidence-based research project, and then they create an intervention based on the pilot data that they gather on the target population. And the idea is for them to really focus on a specialized population of some sort. So some of them will focus on underserved populations, and some of them will focus on some segmented population. So this particular group of students, Dustin Gibson and Alex Millet, they just graduated this summer, and so I'm presenting for them. They wanted to focus on the effects of EMR use on patient and physician interaction, which is one of my specialty areas, PPI. And if you're interested in my books in that, please, I encourage you to read my books on patient-provider interaction. You can just Google it or whatever, Amazon. So we brainstormed about the communication elements, the patient-provider interaction, and how EMR use and electronic records are changing the way that physicians and patients are interacting with one another, and what are some best ways to do that based on what we know about communication theory. So I asked the students to use, to take a theoretically grounded, evidence-based approach to their project. So the theory that they focused on as related to this population is called interaction adaption theory. And it stems from scholars in health communication and family communication as well. And interaction adaption theory states that the adaption within all interpersonal interactions is communicative and signals those within the interaction, as well as those observing the interaction, about the dispositional characteristics existing between communicators. So it's that sort of adaption and mirroring, or lack of mirroring, that might go on in a given interaction. And what happens is what's called the norm of reciprocity is established through time as patients and physicians adapt to each other based on the outcomes of previous interactions. And this is a core thing in the field of interpersonal communication, where each interaction that is occurring is based on a history of interactions. It's not just the current interaction that's happening. And so this can apply to romantic relationships, and then we've applied it to the doctor-patient interaction or the provider-patient interaction. So if you have a history with this patient, your current interaction is not just based on that current interaction, but the history of interactions are brought to that particular interaction, and there might be some historical context there. And so, I use examples from interpersonal relationships, particularly the marital relationship. You might overhear a neighbor, a couple, long-term married couple, say, "Take the trash out," and you hear sort of, inflection of the voice, and you hear anger, and you're like, "Whoa, what's going on?" But if you understand the norm of reciprocity, you understand that line, that particular interaction in time, is based on a long history of interaction of someone in that relationship not taking the trash out. And so... So that just kind of gives you an example of how the norm of reciprocity can impact the current interaction. So this type of adaption occurs through the exchange of verbal and nonverbal communication and the effects of these messages on the dynamics of the interactional qualities of the patient-provider relationship. So IAT proposes three main conditions that affect communicative qualities during PPI, and those are the requirements. I mean, we have a requirement. There might be a treatment protocol, or set of treatment protocols, diagnostic things, and so forth. We have expectations that we might come to a certain type of decision-making, And providers and patients might have different expectations in terms of the outcome, especially some of the examples that you were giving about the patients coming into your clinic. And desires, of course, can differ. So according to IAT, the combination of requirements, expectations, and desires creates something that's called an interaction position. And so we're coming at it from sort of our different viewpoints or standpoints. And interaction positions are not static. They're moving. They're susceptible to change at any time during that interaction. Two main predictions of IAT, behavioral, communicative, and cognitive reciprocity will occur when there are discrepancies between individual interaction positions, if they're small, and reciprocity, and secondly, reciprocity will be avoided if discrepancies between individual interaction positions are large or disparate. Makes sense, right? So my students focused on the population over the age of 55 because we thought it would be kind of interesting to see how people who hadn't dealt with electronic medical records across their health lifespan were sort of adjusting to this new technology, knowing that older adults tend to be later adopters of new technologies themselves. And so we thought it would be interesting to see, also given that older adults tend to be the largest segment of the population in healthcare settings. And that's increasing, as you all know. So anyway, 83% of all visits in 2008, just to give you an idea, but of course most of you know this already, so I'll move on. So our main research question was, how does the physician's use of EMR systems during patient consultations affect patient satisfaction? So what's going on in terms of implementing the EMR system? My students had access to particular hospital and physicians within that hospital, and that was another reason why they focused on, rather than healthcare providers in a broad way, they had access to a particular set of physicians, so that's kind of partly why they focused on physicians particularly. And so they expected decrease in perceived patient-centered care, loss of rapport with patients, and decreases in patient satisfaction. Just basic initial results, because we didn't have a huge sample. We had a little more than 20 physicians who completed a very short 13-item survey on a 7-point Likert scale, ranging from 1 to 7. And in terms of, you were curious about what the physician was doing with the computer, and that was really high in terms of people were very curious. The physician discussed what he was doing with the computer, and so the mean there was kind of low. And we had access to the patients of these particular physicians in the particular hospital, just to clarify. Your verbal interaction was basically a question and answer session, which was, you know, relatively higher than we thought. You were satisfied with your consultation, so sort of right in the middle there. And then you were less satisfied with the physician using computer charts compared to traditional paper charts. And so you can see it was 5.6 on that 7-point scale. Research question two was, would patient satisfaction increase as a result of physicians providing patients more access to the processes involved in the use of EMR systems during consultations? So what they did is they did sort of the study one and study two. And study one was based on research question one that came out of the first class, the health campaigns class, and then this research question two, they kind of adjusted based on the little findings, the initial findings that they had. Okay, given those results, what, how can we increase patient satisfaction if we provide patients more access to these processes during consultations? So then the results of this were, you would be more satisfied during your consultation if your physician openly discussed what they were doing with the computer, and a high mean there of 6.1, showed you exactly what they were doing with the computer, and they liked that, invited you to participate, they liked that, stood or was seated close to you within 4 feet, and again, this is based on the prior feedback, and faced the computer screen toward you. And so all these initial results sort of say, hey, these are some things that we need to be considering in how we are... our prior speaker was talking about implementation of the EMR system. This is more about sort of how do we position that new system and involve the patient as much as we can while we're still the experts. We, meaning, you know, the providers in the room are the experts, but involving them and showing them instead of sort of keeping everything away from the patient. So they indicated that they would be more satisfied if physicians more openly discussed what they're doing with their computers, so it's not so hidden. And so they want to see the EMR computer monitors and stand closer to the physicians during that consultation process. So rather than having the computer like it is now, where let's pretend I'm a physician for a second, and you're the patient, and I have it right here, and I can only see it, right? It'd be better to sort of architecturally have it, to set up a table like this and have it between us, right? Where the patient might be here, and but the computer is here, and they can sort of see and be involved to an extent in seeing what's going on with their own records. Patients indicated they wanted their physicians to invite them to participate in interacting with that EMR system and to sort of double check, you know, can you see sort of what's going on here. So these initial findings, again, this wasn't a large sample, but it just gives us sort of an initial, scratches the surface about, you know, doing more investigations on this, more systematic empirical investigations with a larger population. It seems like there's substantial implications for the future direction of not only the utilization of EMRs during the consultation process, but the future direction of what we should be considering in consultations and the patient-provider interaction. So then based on these initial results, these are my students right here. They're really sweet kids, and they did a really nice job. And then what they did is they created a brochure that could be handed out to physicians to sort of, you know, let them know about these additional things they might want to consider as they're implementing the EMR records. So they created this part of the health campaigns class, and the capstone that kind of tags onto it is then to have an intervention. And so some of them will create a video, a YouTube kind of video based on their data. Others will create a brochure, and I kind of let them be creative in what they create, but to try to think about, okay, how can we then educate the target population with the empirical data that we've gathered, and and help to make a change and to create some behavioral change. So they created this brochure. It's sort of three, you know, it can fold in three ways: contact information, some tips and tricks that should be considered, and this is sort of the other side of that approach. And they have a little fact sheet and so forth. So they did a really nice job, and I'm really proud of them. So I really give my students total credit for this, although I guided them a little bit, but they did a really nice job. So thank you for listening and coming. They were stuck. They were not on wheels. They were stuck, and it was in a hospital. But I believe there were offices within the hospital or connected to the hospital.
Yeah. Because once you have your computer stuck into the wall,
right.
There's no moving, or there's very limited amount of stuff you can do to improve that.
Exactly. And I think this is shifting naturally with the new technologies. People are starting to carry around iPads and little tablets and things like that. So I think we're going to see a shift. Yeah, they do get hot. You're right. You're right.
They have wonderful, like, carrying things that just move like
an iPad. Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay.
So that no matter whether you are left-handed or right-handed,
uh-huh.
That matters too.
Right.
Where things are situated are backwards for one person.
Uh-huh, right.
So if you have a computer on wheels, we try to do wireless that suggests that so mm-hmm. that you don't have table bubble.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes you can pick a corner that's your best thing and have your room set up.
And you know, this thing that we didn't get into this with this, but I write about this kind of thing, you know, things like a lot of those nonverbal cues like eye contact. It's not an easy thing even for providers to suddenly have this technology and then to remember, because sometimes people get so caught up in the things they're having to fill out, you know, and then complete. This was the same for paper as well as this. But still kind of learning how to make sure you're maintaining that eye contact, you're not using the technology as a barrier, a psychological barrier, what we call immediacy. You know, so this psychological barrier can create a lack of immediacy or psychological closeness with the patient. And so these little things, trying to figure out how to implement the new technologies that are helping us in a lot of ways, and helping providers be more organized, like you were talking about, and really, you know, systematically pulling things together, which is all really, really good. But then remembering, how do we still maintain that interpersonal, you know, those verbal and nonverbal cues that we know from the literature create an increased patient satisfaction. You know,
you've got to sit and look right at them and then be able to move your things so that you can, because you can flip a chart like that, oh, your weight's gone down. That's an exciting one.
Right?
You want to show the patient that.
Well, show, yeah, evolve. It's just a simple thing, you know, instead of sort of holding it in front, sort of holding it to the side and saying, and kind of inviting them to look at the screen weeks so they feel like they're participating. Again, even though you're the expert, right? But just those little subtle things can dramatically increase patient satisfaction. And as you all know, when you have increased patient satisfaction, you have less medical malpractice, you don't have to deal with lawyers, you know, and this stuff really makes a huge difference. So that's kind of what, you know, I bring in terms of studying health communication, patient-provider interaction. Yes?
I'm actually friend of the public health. And I work with Claire directly. So this is exciting on that part. But I actually, I work with providers in the state of Michigan, and we're trying to, there's a lot of folks with independent planning that have moved to, obviously, the EHR system. But there's a lot of pushback from the physicians, not until the nurse practitioners, but the medical director that actually has to say yes to the bad line dollar of bringing in more funds, more resources to utilize. And it's just, we all know the data. We know that ultimately it has positive outcomes. But it's how do you get past or not past, or how do you work and have a good dialogue to change that paradigm? Because there's
Very resistant.
Yes.
Physicians especially are very resistant. You guys know more than me.
We can bring you to Michigan.
Well, one of the things that I found a really good way to frame it when I went to a training update this past summer, one of the big complaints is how many clicks.
Yeah.
And they say, I have to click this, I have to click that. It's click. And they said, don't look at it as number of clicks, but how meaningful are the clicks? Because by one extra click, you see what all those screens that I showed you, one extra click, you have some information that you can easily access. You're not trying to remember what did I do last time. Because it did get recorded somewhere by clicking on that screen that might kind of is giving you some data. Another thing is to get people comfortable with doing things differently. I would admit I was one of those people, young, even though I'm young, and everybody says, oh, you're young, you're too big tech savvy. I liked it old fashioned pen and paper. And so it was really a stretch for me, especially with the patient interaction thing, me being a mental health provider, to be looking at it. And so I always felt like I was being rude. And so I found a way to position myself and I've improved my typing skills because I can now talk to somebody and type without looking, because I just would always say, I'm so sorry. I'm not trying to be rude, but I'm documenting here. But it's really getting people to embrace it, because some of the benefits of it are, well, you can read everybody's handwriting. You have the ability to track all of this data that previously you have to go in through a chart and have someone extract it. And so it's really showing the usefulness of the system. If they're, depending on the system that's being used, really taking the time to show the shortcuts. Because there were shortcuts that we didn't know about. And so once we found some of these shortcuts, people said, oh, I could just do this, and here it is, and it's done. And so they weren't as resistant. And we only have a few physicians, but there were two of them who were really resistant, but once we showed them some of the shortcuts, now there's no problem, and they love the system.
And if you can have one of the people who are a champion, who understands it, if you have a nurse practitioner who loves it and does it, they can spend, it depends on how often your physician comes. Like for us, our physician comes once every 2 weeks. And so that's a long time in between if they have no experience with an EHR. So I hang with them, and I go, and the first couple of times I wasn't there.
wonderful physicians where he has a little bit of AED and he has a little bit of OCD, and so he wants all these things in order and in the correct order, so he was doing that a very difficult way. When you can click on a thing, it goes and it's done. So you need somebody who can hang with him for a day, and then this is how he types. I have to walk away.
Yeah.
But his typing skills have improved a little, so now he's more like this. But, you know, like, those things, everybody has their own issues, right? So I can't watch that. I have to just turn away. But if you can have somebody who can hang with them, because the novice part of an EHR is that everybody's focused on the EHR and they forget everything about the patient, everything that they're trying to do, how do I order this, how do I do this, how do I do that, and they click back to work around it.
And the persuasion and social influence literature speaks to exactly what you're talking about. Find that person that they have trust and rapport with to show them, and you're going to have a higher likelihood than participating and engaging. You got to find that kind of, and it might not be the same for everybody, you know. So you got to think about the sort of the relationships in the organization and the competencies of people who could reach certain people, because there might be certain people that reach certain people, because the opinion leader in their group is considered the opinion leader, so they're more likely to listen to that person. So this is drawing from all the communication theory stuff. But you know, just think about an organization about those kinds of people, and then yeah, just show them lockstep, you're going to do it. You know, 80% of medical errors are due to communication breakdown. 80%. So you can say, this is found by the JDAHO in 2002, one of the quotes that I know for a lot of people. And so this system, so that's an argument to the physician, this system will reduce the medical errors because it's going to systemize everything. And like you're saying, try to say, hey, now we're trying to reduce the amount of clicks, but look what this click shows you. You know, and show that enthusiasm, and we're going to get there. It's just, you know, change is hard.
It's a process, I think, especially if there's a gap, a generational gap between younger residents who are 2 to 4 years out of medical school and, you know, physicians who've been in the same system for the last 25 years. I've got some experience with EMR implementation, so we just went live in my health system about 8 months or close to a lot. But I think one of the things that I probably would have done differently is maybe offer some opportunities for the physicians and nurses to go through just like basic, you know, computer skills, maybe, you know, typing tests. Because we find that when you do business for 18 to 20 minutes, 20, 15, 30, 45 minutes, there's not a whole lot of time to, you know, to navigate the thing that
you want. And you need to cut your initial visits way back.
Oh, yeah. But I think if you're able to find like a physician supervisor or physician champion, you know, standing medical director or one of the co-medical directors, that could help. You know, that could help. But again, it's just time.
And you have to be really persistent, because our physician wants to do every third patient. I said no. Every third patient never happens. We all know that. So we went from 100% paper for 20 years of working together to 100% EMR. Because you also forget all those tricks those people tell you in training and all shortcuts. You forget how to use things. And everybody reverts back.
There are a couple of questions here.
I just had a couple of points. What elements that I know in the physician champion thing worked well in my day. We have a physician champion, we call them, that works with our regional extension center. That's a, you know, pretty prominent position on our state medical society, so they're able to reach out to you know, the private physician. And I come from the behavioral health world, and so our state behavioral health medical director also serves as a physician champion for our behavioral health plan. It's funny that you mentioned mental health, because in mental health, I've always found it works much better to break down that barrier, and it's easier for psychiatrists and psychologists and social workers to do that than it is for a regular general practitioner. And normally they just like, they'll fill out the assessments together. You know, they'll try to screen them out together. But on the other side of that, I kind of remember like episodes in Seinfeld, like back in the day when Elaine was trying to get her chart. And like, they won't let her read the chart. They're still not that they're elected. They don't. Right. If I have to tell them the progress notes, they're not going to write what they want to write.
Right.
You know,
because
they don't want the patients to want the writing is to be the kind of
sketch.
So I mean, that's just a couple of things that came about since you're hearing that. So, and also, is this open source here? Or is this proprietary?
I'm happy to send it to you if you want to send me an email. Yeah, absolutely. It's just, an issue just to do.
Well, I mean, I like it because we could put it in our packet with our resources.
Yeah.
It helps with, because a lot of it's going from 100% paper, and there's a lot of anxiety, and this is really an interesting aid that we can put in
there. Yeah, conductors, yeah. It's, all about helping and moving forward and getting that conversation with our doctors.
And I know that I still have some nurses who do that.
You have a
question? Yeah, thank you both so much. At my organization, we've had electronic health records for almost 10 years now, so we're much more farther along, but I still think it's really great. We have great training for how to use the technology, but not really even that perspective from how to really engage the patient in while you're doing that. And I think I work with one physician who does a great job of turning to always turn to screening and sharing that directly with the patient, and how can we, implement this kind of training.
Really reduces the anxiety on the part of the provider as well as the patient. And you're not worried about, I'm taking too much time, taking stuff, they're able to see what you're doing and feedback, what is going on.
That's a huge cultural shift that's happening. I think it is happening with certain people with certain dispositions of the personality.
Yeah.
I mean, that if we can even systemize that and then really say, hey, this is known to increase patient satisfaction and that's going to reduce your malpractice, so let's get on board here and, involve the patient because, it's our health to patients. I should know what you're writing about me and I want to be involved in that,
I think it's included in the training.
Yeah.
So when we went live with our implementation, we have a benefit of having staff come out periodically to say, how are you guys doing? And if you need a little refresher training. And some of this information was presented to us in some of those refresher trainings, but then also when we did our upgrade, they kind of really went through and reminded us, this is some of the ways that we do things. Because I also do a little bit of primary care, I got duly trained. It's really useful to use some of these tools when you're showing people their weight or their blood pressure and even their lab results. That's one of the things I left out. We have a link with our hospital, so the lab automatically populated to the chart. And we can graph things, or we can show people. So it's really useful when I'm telling someone that you're looking at your cholesterol, and I can show them this graph or a chart right there on the screen and say, last time it was 155, today you're down to 120. And so they can actually get it instead of these growing numbers at them. And so it does help, but it's true about some of the behavioral health clients, especially someone who has paranoia, who's coming in there and you're sitting there tight when they already feel like they're being followed. And so it's really important to communicate to them, I'm going to be typing as we go along because this is how I can make sure your information is accurate. And so they usually believe that somebody is trying to be accurate and really write down what's happening. And some people will even say, wait, what did you just type in there? And you read it back to them. And they kind of feel like they're part of the process. I am sort of like some of the older clinicians in that if I'm doing my evaluation and I'm typing down something like, paranoid and blah blah blah, giving a description, that I will skip over that information. It's just fine, it's gone. But I will click on everything else until they don't notice it. Just because they and so I don't want to. I've been doing everything accurately, but then I took that information and they're paranoid and they don't agree.
I have a question for you on how you're using your EMR for quality improvement.
So for quality improvement, so we do have the ability to do some of the inquiries. And so we do PDSA cycles, the Plan, Do, Study, Act approach. So we'll do it at certain intervals. We'll run a report or take an inquiry from the system or whatever it is that we're looking at. And we all sit down and review the data. And if we see, okay, say for example, example, what's going on with us not meeting the target for the PHQ-9 screening? We actually did a cycle and said, okay, what are some of the factors that could affect this number? And so then we come up with a whole new workflow based off of the data that we see and any gaps in what we feel should actually be going on. Then we'll go back and do another inquiry after a certain interval has passed and compare the data. And so it's an ongoing process.
I have a question for you. I imagine if your patient population is somewhat extremely and perhaps you have issues with like retention and bringing especially your patient side of the population back in, how does the EHR help you keep track of the patients that are coming back in?
And so that's one of the other things that you need to want to report to see who hasn't come in like for a certain amount of months, so we can say how many patients have a diagnosis of diabetes. And with their last office visit before March 31st. And so it will actually show us, wait a minute, we have 25 patients that didn't show up. We can even go by provider to see on whose panel are people not showing up. And so in some instances, like who's not meeting their indicators, and we try to pass that information out and fold it up and slide it to people and what's going on with your panel. But it also gives us a way to do a little bit of outreach. And sometimes what we do is people don't have phones. A lot of our clients have email. One of their favorite places to hang out is the library and different community centers. And so some clients do prefer that we communicate with them via email. But we can also type in notes if we know someone hangs out in certain areas. Every now and then we use our health promotion department. They do a lot of outreach, HIV counseling and testing, and so we can use them sometimes to go, hey, Mrs. Smith hangs out around the Walgreens, can you go down there and see them and give them a note? And so we've done things like that just by being able to put those notes in there on their patient banner with their demographic information and know kind of where the person hangs out, what shelter they usually stay at, in order to do some of the outreach. And then the other thing is, the hospital that we partner with, we have access to their database, and so we actually get notifications if someone's been to the hospital. And so that's one of the ways we kind of catch people with our, we call her transitions coordinator, she's at MSW. She's stationed there in the emergency room 3 days out of the week. And so somebody says, oh yeah, I need my care at Glide, they go grab her, and she can actually access our health record because it's on a web-based platform. And so she can go into the chart and say, wait a minute, you haven't been to your visit, schedule them for an appointment, and they have their appointment and they're out of the emergency room and not utilizing that service.
I guess my next question is, both of you have different perspectives on the patient portal. Any information you have on communication through the patient portal, and for you if you have one, and
it's in the plan. We're looking at getting the patient portal. And for our population, it would be something that is very useful. Surprisingly, and it shocked me at first because you get information and they say, oh, these populations aren't involved in their health care, and a lot of it is based on stuff that's happened in the past. But what we actually find out is, as vulnerable as our population is, a lot of them are really dedicated and devoted to their health care. A lot of our clients will actually come in and be surprised that this person that you don't think will show up, they didn't get their appointment reminder because they didn't have a phone, and no, they're not learning how to use email. But they sit at the library and they look up everything and they'll come in, I actually looked up the medication that you gave me and I didn't want to take it because I had questions. It's like, huh? And so, the patient portal, we think, will be a great thing for them because a lot of our clients like that. They have smart homes and everything else, and they tell me how to use stuff that I can't even figure out.
Do you know if your patient portal is going to be bilingual? Like for us, ours is only English, so that's a limitation.
I'm not sure about that, but I know we've been looking into a product to use, and it more than likely will have bilingual capabilities. Because some of the things in our system already have the ability to translate, like the patient information sheets. We have them available in different languages.
Okay.
But the people that we use Alliance in Chicago is who we use for our support, for our electronic health record. This stuff is actually, like, stuff is actually tested and translated and things like that before it's input into the system. And then we do have the providers on site. And you look at this, does this make sense? And if they look at a couple of them and they're okay, then we don't check anything else.
You know, but even within these communities, like you're saying, a certain people are hanging out at the library, and within, there might be people who have a smartphone, people who don't, but they're talking with each other. And so, you know, there are ways of identifying even within their social networks, and I don't know, creating some sort of buddy system and making sure that they're helping each other in terms of getting involved in the patient portal, and, you know, going in for appointments and all these kind of things. So those are things that a lot of times we don't think about. We think of patients as individuals, but they're usually connected with some sort of community, you know, people in the community.